You are looking live at Chicken Dinner.
I'll bet you $20 I can get you gambling before the end of the day.
I think I'll take two chickens.
Go on riverboat gambling trips.
You're going to die for some chickens.
Hey, what's your chicken dinner?
Someone is.
It was feathers yesterday. There was no chicken.
What you got riding on this game?
My daughter.
What a gambler.
It's Chicken Dinner.
Hey, Babalugas, we got a bet here.
Here's your host, Sam Panionovich.
It's called Winner, Winner, Chicken Dinner right there, boys.
Let's get this thing going.
Winner, Winner, Chicken Dinner. How about that?
Away we go. Chicken Dinner Wednesday, August 18th, 2021. Follow us on Twitter at ChickenXDinner, Instagram at ChickenDinnerSP, and smash the button so you get this mother clucker once it drops. We will talk to professional bettor Eddie Walls later on in the show. Eddie grades a couple of my college football season win totals, which I found to be a very fascinating exercise. He also has a handful of totals he's bet personally. I asked him. He ripped 5 straight minutes of totals that he has bet, plus the importance of discipline and strategy to bet sports. We had 2 in the preseason, was very happy to have 2 wins with the Broncos pick'em and the Washington football team under 19.5, although I'm still laughing at the fact that every time I tweet a preseason football play, I happen to lose followers. I don't know why that is. It never happens in the NFL or college football or NBA, but I start putting out preseason information, and it's like, oh, fuck this guy. Hey, you do you. You don't want the preseason stuff? That's fine. I can tell you, though, that the Sharps attacked again on Monday. This was a Monday move for a lot of these wise guys. In week 2 of the preseason, they laid Dolphins 3.5 up to 5. They went under 37, Giants and Browns 35.5. They bet the Raiders from minus 5 to minus 7. Laid the Vikings from pick to 1 to 1.5 to 2.5. And we have that now, too. We do have that pending. Vikings minus 2.5. Anything under 3, I'm okay with. I like Zimmer and company to bounce back after getting embarrassed. And the 5th play that the wise guys did on Monday morning, the Washington football team laid 3.5 to 4.5, and it got to 5, and then eventually the buyback the other way on the plus 5. But I have 2. Vikings, the aforementioned Vikings. It's amazing how that works. All I heard about leading up to that Vikings-Broncos game was Mike Zimmer, 20-5 in his last 25 preseason games against the spread. And people were just betting Minnesota like they knew the final score. The knowledge we got, the information that we heard, was that Kirk Cousins, Nate Stanley, those two weren't going to play, and that Zimmer was going to hold a lot of guys out. We didn't know it was going to be 30, but that's why you put out Broncos pick 'em, and it actually opened Broncos plus 1. By kickoff, it got the Broncos minus 2, 2.5. The information situation said Denver. And what do you know? Vic Fangio played Drew Lock and Teddy Bridgewater a whole lot because he's trying to figure out which guy is going to start. Meanwhile, Minnesota, they know what's up. They know it's Kirk Cousins and Dalvin Cook and Justin Jefferson and Adam Thielen and a healthy offensive line. They are set for the regular season. Denver is not. And did you catch that line for week number 2 of the preseason? Denver against Seattle up to 5.5. The first number I saw, it may have been a look-ahead number for week 2. Denver was a pick'em against Seattle. Denver opened up 2.5, 425, 426. That is a Saturday night game in Washington. That 2.5 went to 3, went to 3.5, and now it's 5, 5.5. So Denver, if you think about the accordion, which I talk about on this show all the time, when the perception starts all the way on the left and moves all the way to the right, Denver was a 2-point or a 1.5-point dog for week number 1 of the preseason. Well, week number 2, minus 5, minus 5.5. So this thing has moved about 7 points off of one result.
Oh, I like Denver against Seattle.
I bet you do. Did you like them last week? I loved them last week, and now, honestly, it's Seattle or pass. I can't lay 5.5 with Denver. We react to so little as sports bettors. And I was on Cofield & Company. I do that show every Tuesday with Steve Cofield and his rotating list of co-hosts. And Adam Hill was co-hosting a couple nights ago. And he said, I was talking with somebody who thinks the Broncos, they might actually be for real this year. I said, well, why does he think that? Well, he watched them play Minnesota. What? One preseason game. Minnesota? Going to be a good regular season team, I think. And Denver could be okay, but the hierarchy in the AFC West, Chiefs are a clear number one, Chargers are two, and then there's a big drop-off to Denver and Las Vegas. I think they're interchangeable, Denver and Vegas. I like Denver a little bit more because I like Fangio and that defense more than I like Vegas. But you can't possibly come away from that preseason game against a team down 30 players and think, wow, Denver might be something this year. Don't overreact ever in gambling, and especially don't overreact to preseason week one. Unders 14-3 in the preseason so far. And here come those adjustments. Because for all the David Purdoms and the Ben Foxes and the guys that tweet this stuff out, here are the trends, here are the hot trends, and the bettors see them and go, oh, wow, 14-3 unders. Well, let me find some unders. The books are going to adjust, especially in a preseason market that doesn't take a lot of square dollars as it is. We talked about this last week. The Sharps love the preseason. They love Summer League because they get down on information and they move these markets quick. So if I'm a bookmaker and I just saw 17 games where 14 went under, you bet your ass. If my true number on a game is 41, I might open it at 39.5. If the true number is 38, I might open it at 37 or 36.5. You can't over-adjust because then the wise guys will hit you over the other way. But some of these games, like I was looking at the Arizona-Kansas City game. They opened it low. They opened 37. I thought the true number in that game was 39. But because of all the under stuff, you go a little bit lower. Well, look what happened in that game. 41 on the total now. Open 37, now it's 41. Buffalo-Chicago, open 37, 38.5. Baltimore-Carolina, open 34, 35.5. Houston-Dallas, open 36, 37.5. A lot of these totals in week two are crawling up. You wouldn't think that would be the case after a 14-3 underrun in the Hall of Fame game in week number one. But the adjustments come low, and then it's a little bit of over money. Jacksonville, New Orleans, open 37, 39.5 at Heritage. Interesting how that works. Despite 14-3 unders, you're seeing a lot of these games with money on the over from respected players. And Minnesota, look, I'm on Minnesota -2.5. Somebody said, well, you know, they shouldn't be favored. Those same people that talked about Mike Zimmer till they were blue in the face are all of a sudden selling Minnesota. They watched one preseason game and go, wow, Minnesota sucks. Come on, pay attention. The other game, I just can't make sense of it. I'm going under 38.5, New England and Philadelphia. This one doesn't even make sense. And because of the injuries for New England that are mounting in their tight end room, that team is going to have a harder time protecting the quarterback and I think running the football. We know they're a ground and pound team anyway, especially with Cam Newton out there. Cam still can't throw. But if you think about the schematics of their offense, they are trying to run the football and set up power run. You bring Mac Jones in, yeah, he's going to throw the ball a little bit, but he was still throwing a lot of checkdowns, a lot of 10, 15-yard passes. He had one deep shot to Wilkerson in the end zone that was dropped, but New England is still going to be a defensive-minded team. They want to build the wall, stop the run, put you in 3rd and 6, 3rd and 7, and then let the hounds loose for the backfield. I don't see it. barring a pick six, a fumble six, a kick return, of course the game could go over. But 70% of the time, this thing is not touching 39. And I have an issue with the New England offense. I think their offense, given all the injuries that they've sort of compiled over the last week or so, it's going to be tough for New England to move the football. The books are telling you they have no idea on the side. New England minus one, 1.5. All right, there you go. Flip a coin. The total, though, you're seeing some 38s now pop, circa 37.5. We tweeted out 38.5 middle of the afternoon on Wednesday, and I think this game is 17-14. Even if it's 21-17, we win with the hook under 38.5. I also love watching the preseason, and you see guys that have either made you money or lost you money before. And these are guys you don't usually see in the NFL regular season. Jacksonville's got C.J. Beathard out there. I remember Beathard, he made me a lot of money 1 year against Illinois in college football. He's out there, second, third-string quarterback for the Jacksonville Jaguars. I'm like, oh, hey, I remember him. Chase Daniels out there playing quarterback in the preseason. Missouri, a Missouri great at quarterback, Chase Daniel. And Nathan Peterman is still out there banging around somewhere. These guys, like, oh my God, I remember I lost a lot of money on Nathan Peterman. Didn't he throw 4 interceptions in one game? You got to be careful with these guys. But again, with week 2, week 3, week 4, you have to understand the game plan, who's in, who's out, what's the goal. All of that stuff is paramount in the preseason. And guys, move these markets fast. Don't think that, you know, preseason's only for degenerates, though. That's been proven to be incorrect. College football season win totals. We put them out. We're ready. Got Buffalo under 7.5, minus 105 at DraftKings. Charlotte under 5.5, minus 130 at the Westgate. You get the extra half win. It's interesting, though, because WinBet has 5 under minus 130. 5 wins under minus 130. Westgate in Vegas has 5.5 under minus 130. So it's the same juice, but you get the half win. And it's so important to shop around. For Charlotte, FanDuel, 5 under 20. PointsBet, 5 under 20. DraftKings, 5 under 25. WinBet, 5 under 30. Westgate, 5.5 under 30. If you're going under, why are you going anywhere else? Text your buddy or your cousin that lives in Vegas. Have them get down. If you like the over, you probably want to bet it at WinBet. Over 5 plus 110. That's 5 different books and almost 5 different prices. Minnesota, over 6.5 at DraftKings, minus a quarter. The other 4 books, all at 7. Why would I go over 7 when I could go over 6.5? The one team that I got some feedback on, Ohio State, 10.5 at Westgate, over minus 150 now, or minus 160 I saw. I'm sorry, I'm not laying 160 on a win total. I don't even like laying 140 for that matter. I'll minimize the juice anytime I can. And I don't have Ohio State losing a game. So WinBet, PointsBet have 11 over plus 10. FanDuel plus 05, DraftKings minus 115 to go over 11. So I took the plus 10. I'm not too concerned about a slip up. They bring back arguably the 2 best receivers in the country collectively. Chris Olave, Garrett Wilson. They're both back in Columbus. Bring back a lot of linemen. Bring back, you know, a lot of weapons on that roster. Now they have some young quarterbacks, but the talent there, when you compare it to the rest of the Big Ten, it's not close. Brad Powers has Ohio State favored by double digits in every game. Even Ohio State, Oregon, Powers has Buckeyes minus 11 in that game. I think it's week 2. So I'm not too phased. If they lose one game, I'll push. But if a quarterback blows his knee out week two or three, then they could win nine. I hate thinking that way, but I'm not going to swallow minus 160 on a season win total, and that's it. Simple. Ole Miss, I've talked about Matt Corral. I like over 7.5. Offense will be better. Defense should be better. They got some young studs in that secondary now, and that was a problem last year. Kiffin went out and got a top 20 recruiting class, and a lot of those guys are on defense. They return a lot, too, from a defense that was pretty young last year. But Ole Miss is not winning with defense. The defense is going to, if anything, keep that offense moving. And Corral, I still think, 25, 30-1 at the American books, 39-1 at Circa to win the Heisman. He reminds me a lot of a player that could be in a situation like Johnny Manziel, where the offense is electric, can't be stopped, but the defense is going to keep games close. Ole Miss ain't going to hold you to 17-20. These games are going to be 42-28, 48-35. They're going to put points on the board at Ole Miss, that's for sure. Over 7.5, Ole Miss, minus 110 at DraftKings. And Toledo, found plus money at FanDuel. Over 8.5, plus 100. Other books, minus 15, minus 15, minus 30, minus 30. Give me plus 100. On a team that has been one of the top teams in the country when it comes to third down efficiency. They get off the field. And Jason Candle's club at Toledo, they return 21 starters, 11 on defense. The entire defense is back. This is a 9 or a 10 win team. And they're really only a surefire dog at Notre Dame. They'll lose that game. And they'll slip up again. But 9-3 to me is so realistic with Toledo. Over 8.5 plus 100. That's the most talented team in the MAC. The MAC is whack, though. You're going to lose a game you're not supposed to. But that team still, Toledo, has the talent to win 9 or 10 games. We are going to sweat this Fernando Tatis Jr. bet till the very end for the MVP. He comes back over the weekend. Some books had him pick him plus 110 to win the MVP. I'm thinking, please, just don't get hurt. Tatis goes 4-for-5 at the plate, 2 homers, and immediately the books start to move him. Minus 250, minus 270. I've got the odds boom screen up now. He's minus 275 at FoxBet, minus 280 at FanDuel, minus 300 at PointsBet, minus 300 at DraftKings, minus 303 at MGM. He's the best player in the National League, but we need him to stay on the field. And they're moving him into the outfield. He's playing a lot more outfield now, so he doesn't have to go diving for ground balls and stuff like that. He's still reckless on the base pass, and it's hard to knock a guy who plays the way he plays, but this kid is clearly the best player. Harper on the two line, about 4-5-1. Muncy, anywhere from 6-850. Freeman, he's back up north of 10-1. Same with Trey Turner, about 17-18-1. It's Tatis's award to lose. But we are not really sweating the handicap anymore. We're sweating the health. If he's out there and he finishes the season strong, and by strong I mean he stays on the field, he's the MVP. I feel great about our bets, plus 850, 9-1. Some of you guys got 10, 11, 12-1. I feel great about it. You should feel great about it. Just stay on the field. More baseball. Jeff Passan tweeted about the 7.5 bad teams in baseball. Diamondbacks, Orioles, Cubs, Royals, Pirates, Rangers, Nationals, and Jeff adds the Rockies on the road. So 7.5. As of this Monday, a couple days ago, since August 1, those teams a combined 20-76. That's bad. What am I getting at? Well, who does this benefit down the stretch? A lot of you guys looking for futures, teams to make the playoffs, teams to win the pennant. Here are just some facts. So we'll call them the Magnificent 7.5, even though they're not magnificent at all. In the American League, the Red Sox will play those teams 12 times. The Yankees 9, the Athletics 6. all of a sudden, if you have an A's ticket, you're probably like, oh, man, that sucks. Because the Red Sox have a lot of Orioles down the stretch. So the Red Sox play 12, Yankees 9, A's 6. Here's where it gets crazy. In the National League, the Phillies against the 7.5 teams that suck, the Phillies play those teams 24 times. The Reds, 19. The Padres, only 3. So if you're looking at that NL wild card, Slam Diego, Cincinnati, well, the Reds play those teams. D-backs, Cubs, Rockies, Nationals. They're going to play those teams 19 times. And the Padres only have 3. Hat tip to Jeff Passan for pointing that out. The schedule could decide who makes it in and who doesn't. I'd rather have the Red Sox than the A's, and I'd rather have the Reds than the Padres, given the fact that they're going to play shitty teams, the Red Sox and Reds, more than the A's and the Padres will. It's something to think about. Two more quick things before we get to Eddie Walls. Jay-Z is applying for a sports betting license in New York State. That's right. Hove! Dan Wallach tweeted this a couple days ago. Dan's going to join the show actually later on this week. Sean Carter will serve as the vice chairman and on the board of directors of Fanatics Betting and Gaming, one of the bidders for online sports betting in New York. Carter will provide creative and strategic direction on the expansion and growth of the Fanatics Sportsbook across the country. Fanatics, which is a sports memorabilia and merchandise retailer, also has a database, has a database of 80 million users who can potentially be converted to sports bettors for little or no acquisition cost. We tried to tell you. We've been trying to tell you. It's all about the list. How big is the list? How big is it? Who can we get? Fanatics can take all those customers, that mailing list with 80 million people, and go, hey, we have a sports book now. Bet with us. All about the list. And Jay-Z going to be a bookmaker. How about them apples? Last thing, Mark DeRosa has made another big futures bet. You may know him as Ed Teach. He was on the show as he was holding his Tampa Bay Buccaneer future tickets that he placed before Tom Brady went to Tampa. Teach is a wizard when it comes to the futures. He had Bucs futures last year. He had Lamar Jackson to win the MVP in 2019. He bought the dip on the Tampa Bay Lightning this past season when they were 8 or 9 to 1 to win the cup. And he also had Donald Trump to win the presidency in 2016. DeRosa is on Trey Lance to win the NFL Most Valuable Player. He got 250 to 1 and 300 to 1 to win almost $1 million. Now, you're not going to get those numbers anymore because that's what Ed does. He goes in and gets numbers and moves the market. I think I saw one book had Lance at 125 or 150 to 1. I don't even know that he's going to start week 4, week 8. I have no idea. But it did make me a little giddy to see those wagers because the guy clearly knows what he's doing. And remember, we've got 49ers to win the division and the NFC. So odds are good that if Trey Lance plays up to the caliber that Mark DeRosa thinks, we're going to be in a good spot. I still think they are the most talented roster in that division. And for all the talk about Tampa Bay, Green Bay, Brady, Rodgers, San Francisco, if they're healthy, they're better on both sides of the ball. They are, if they're healthy. Green Bay, better offense? Yeah, sure. Tampa Bay, better defense? Maybe. Both sides of the ball and the coach and the special teams, I would take San Francisco, especially at the price. But that's a pretty big series of bets on Trey Lance, 250 to 1, 300 to 1, to win the MVP. Joining us now on Chicken Dinner, he is Eddie Walls, professional bettor, hails from Denver, Colorado, but he's actually from the Boston area. We'll get into that in a little bit. On Twitter, at Walls_Edward. Welcome to the show, Eddie, first and foremost, but you could probably relate to this as well. I haven't bet a baseball game in 3 months, and I have never felt better going into football season.
I feel pretty good going into football season. I bet baseball until about July 20th or something when I had to give up. I had my first losing baseball season in a long time, or first losing season in anything in a long time. And I definitely wasn't enjoying myself. So, yeah, I feel better not betting it. That's for certain.
I came across your college football content a while ago, and I think it's one of the best things that you do, and I appreciate your insight and your opinion. So I just wanted to start with the totals that I sent you yesterday. And John Lerner, hat tip to him, he said we needed the chat, and we put this together pretty quickly. But my favorite win total is Buffalo under. Went under 7.5 at -105. They lose their head coach to Kansas. They lose so much of that offense and defense. And here's the other part of a team like Buffalo. When their coach leaves and goes to a Power 5 program, say what you want about Kansas, he still is at Kansas. He takes every player with a pulse with him to Kansas. That team has just been depleted. I don't see how they get to 8, man. I don't.
Yeah, it's a tough one. I mean, I don't think that Buffalo was in any place better as far as a program than probably just about anybody else in the entire, I don't know, FBS really. And now they might be on a trajectory to be rebuilding and possibly collapsing within the next couple of years. Now they still have a dynamite running game that they can lean on. But they are depleted in the secondary, to say the least. He took two of their best cornerbacks or defensive backs. They don't have any depth now either. I mean, when you take, I don't know, 13 players altogether with them?
Yeah.
I've never, you know, I guess this happens in college basketball, but this is the first time I've seen it in college football. And, you know, I love Leopold, but I mean, he really decimated that program with what he did. And they just have a horrible schedule to start the year too. I mean, they play at Nebraska, then they get Coastal Carolina at home. They get a win at Old Dominion. But I mean, yeah, you're right. I mean, it's very, very hard to see the wins on this thing here. If he has this team, if this is 6 months ago, we're looking at this win total, it's probably like 10. Now I think you're probably right. I think 8 is a real stretch. I mean, they have some easy games for sure. They got Akron and Bowling Green back together, but then they have to travel to Miami, Ohio, and then they have to travel to Ball State. Those are probably losses with this team. They're not going to be able to defend the pass. They're not going to be able to pass very well either. Yeah, I like your thought process.
I wonder about the future of the MAC, man. And you actually talked about this on Twitter yesterday. I thought you were onto something, because with this whole NIL thing, with all of these players now getting paid, the MAC is one of my favorite conferences, and I'm going to gamble on the MAC no matter what, because the MAC is fucking incredible for so many reasons. But how do programs in the MAC now sustain success when everybody's going to want to poach their players?
Yeah, I don't think they do. I think the MAC is going to have to start poaching JUCOs in order to stay relevant. Because, you know, I mean, I was just thinking about this the other day. You know, I looked at Bowling Green. I was studying their roster and trying to figure out, I mean, how bad this team really could be. And Andrew Clare, who is their running back for the last, I don't know, 4 years, he's a super senior. He's their only talented player, and he goes to Northwestern. He'd rather be a third string, you know, running back at Northwestern than a first string running back at Bowling Green. It makes sense. If you can get on the field as a college football player and make a touchdown or two, that used to be irrelevant. That might be worth $40,000 or $50,000 now. I mean, people aren't thinking about it on those terms. The Heisman, you know, that used to be, you know, it was kind of relevant towards your draft status. If you win the Heisman this year, you're probably going to make $3 or $4 million.
I took Minnesota over 6.5. So close to taking Illinois over 3.5, but then I thought to myself, it's Illinois, and I missed the 3 because it opened 3 -0.25, -120. So I laid off Illinois. I still lean over there because I do like Bielema a lot more than I like Lovie Smith. But Minnesota, to me, you talk about a team that brings back almost everybody when it comes to returning starters. They have the most returning offensive line starts in the country. They were just depleted by opt-outs, by injuries, by transfer. They just got crushed. And we saw that in one of their first games against Michigan. Remember, it's like, oh, my God, the whole team at Minnesota is not going to play today. They're going to be better this year, a lot better. I went over 6.5.
Yeah, I agree with you 100%. They played 3 games where they were missing 20 players on their roster. this is a team that's probably really overlooked. My biggest problem with Minnesota, though, is whether or not Fleck's calling the plays or Samford's calling the plays.
Yeah.
I mean, Samford is a humongous. Wherever he goes, the offense immediately regresses. And we saw it last year. He's just so damn conservative. And they have a great running back, and they'll have a great running offense. But what he did with that pass offense last year, even when they were healthy, it was a travesty. So if Fleck is calling the plays, they're probably, you know, competing for the Big Ten. If Samford's calling the plays, unfortunately, I don't know. It gets dicey. They do have a really, really nice schedule lined up for them, though. So, yeah, I could see 7 wins. I think they're going to be favored in 7. So you're going to have to get kind of unlucky there.
Yeah, and they'll probably lose a game they shouldn't. The hope is that they can win a game that they shouldn't, you know, so it evens out. The one team that I am so bullish on, I didn't mean to have you on to just grade all my plays. I want to ask you about a couple other things
But I think it's great.
Ole Miss, to me, they're going to be in a situation where they're going to give up a lot of points. We can't expect that defense to get that much better in just one offseason, but I think their offense is better and their defense has more talent, because now you add in another top 20 recruiting class that makes the depth chart better on the defensive side of the ball. Matt Corral is a guy who's going to have a chance to make a lot of magic in the fourth quarter, and to me, he's the difference maker at Ole Miss. He could take them to 9 wins. Schedule, it's a little tough down the stretch, but I believe in the quarterback, and if you got a quarterback, you got a chance. What say you about Ole Miss's total, 7.5?
7.5. Okay. Let me see what I made it. I think I made it 7.5, but, I mean, you're only going to have one upset here. They're going to be favored in 7, possibly 8 games. I really don't know what the line's going to be with LSU. But, I mean, at the end of the day, you hit on all the right topics. They're going to go as far as Corral can take them and Kiffin can take them. I don't think that their defense is up to snuff yet. They'll be much better in the future. I mean, they are going to be starting a lot of 4-star freshman DBs this year. I don't know if they're going to start them, but they're going to get a lot of playing time. The offense that he runs is unbelievably effective, but it also wears down defenses. They've always lacked depth forever there, even when Luke was the coach. But he's trying to improve the depth. I mean, he signed, what, like 7 DBs this offseason. They're a really, really talented team, no doubt about it. I mean, they can do anything on offense against anybody, as we saw against Alabama last year. I like your chances. I don't have any problem with that. You just have to really hope that they stay healthy, especially on offense.
Those totals, man. I remember that total last year. I had a wise guy tell me, yeah, we went over 73 and 74. And then I looked at it at 76, 77 and thought, nah, I missed the move. And it was 63 to 48.
Yeah. No, there was a few games like that. I mean, the worst one was the Auburn game where they opened at 63 and I think it closed 75 and it landed on 63. That was a tough one for a lot of people. There was the missed touchdown call there in that Auburn game that was really controversial. But I was thinking week one against Louisville, wow, I might be able to play over and, you know, they open it at like 75 or whatever. And you say, probably not. They're going to be in the high 70s this year, no doubt about it.
When you look at a number like that, what's your initial reaction? When you look at the screen, you sort of have your play formulated. I like the over. And then you see the screen and it says 75. How do you react to that?
Yeah, you know, I mean, I'm going to make 500 football plays. You know, I'm going to bet 500 games throughout the year, sides and totals. I'm not in a place in my life where I really force anything. If the number's there, it's there. If it's not, then I just pass on it. You know, and then I keep an eye on it. I mean, you know, if for some reason somebody's trying to head fake it, you can find value in that. Or maybe somebody just disagrees with you and you can wait for the number. I mean, you know, you've got all week. You don't have to react right away.
Yeah, I just know some guys that see that number and tell themselves, I can't go over that total. Do you think that way ever, or is that not something that crosses your mind?
I mean, I do matchups. So, I mean, like, you know, throughout the week, if I see on a box score that a team gave up 325 yards of passing against a pretty mediocre passing team, maybe I need to look at my number a little bit better. There were many instances in the last couple of years, but probably, you know, just recently, you know, I had a game where I made it 51, I think, and it opened 51. And the more work I did on it, I said, you know what, I'm going over 51. Even if my number is 51, it just can't be right, because the way these times between how these teams are going to have to react towards each other, they can't find success defensively. So, you know, I mean, yeah, if I make a number and I still really, really like one side or the other, I'm more than likely to put in a bet, but it might just not be a full size unit. I'm a big believer in if you really feel confident in something, maybe the number is not the best thing in the world. I mean, you don't have to always stare at numbers. The best handicapper I know doesn't make numbers. He just does matchups, and he just has a really good feel for what he does. So, you know, it's up to an individual. Me personally, I like to have a number and reasons to why that number makes sense.
So for the numbers you made, whether it be regular season wins or conference odds, what are your favorite numbers? What are the plays you've made so far? Give me a couple.
Okay, let me see here. Regular season win totals, I've got a few. I gave out a few on Twitter. I'll give a few that I didn't give out on Twitter. The first one that I didn't give out on Twitter is Colorado State under 5. I don't like the trajectory of this team whatsoever. I'm not a believer in Adazio. All of their games that are winnable are at home. All their games that they have a chance in are on the road, which doesn't fare well for anybody. And all of their games really don't have a chance on play at home. He's going to switch up the offense for the second time in 3 years. Their quarterback, Santillo from Temple, he can't throw the ball more than 10 yards. Terrible pass defense, pretty decent run defense. But I really just don't believe in this team whatsoever. I think that they're just kind of flat-footed, and it's a very generic run offense. And a Mountain West conference that's completely stacked and loaded this year. I could only find 3 games they were going to be favored in. So I'm going to have a hard time getting there. I'll tell you one that I really, really like is SMU over. Mm-hmm. I found 6, but 6.5 is fine by me too. I have them favored in 7 games, and their offense is going to be absolutely dynamite, but they bring in Levitt, the defensive coordinator, who just does wonders with any defense that he goes into. My only concern is wherever he goes, he kind of butts heads with the coach. But this talent at SMU is really, really rock solid. They're kind of on the cusp of making big things happen last year. I think that this could be a year where they compete in every single game, no matter who they play, even TCU. It's kind of a joke of a schedule for them to only have to come up with 7 wins. So I like SMU over 6 and 6.5. Let's see, another couple that I liked. I like TCU over 7.5. I can't find anything wrong with this team. I was having such a hard time. You know, I do strengths and weaknesses for every single team. And their run defense is amazing. Their pass defense is amazing. They bring back almost everybody on a Patterson defense. Then you have a third year with Dugan, the quarterback, who really showed signs of life last year. You get Zach Evans, the running back, who was the number one overall recruit in the entire nation, in his second year in college football. Offensive line is stacked. I think that they can make some real waves in the Big 12. I would not be shocked if they knock off an Iowa State or an Oklahoma. You know, I think they're going to handle Oklahoma State. They're probably favored against Texas at home this year. I don't know. The trajectory for me was pretty high on that team. Let's see, a couple more. Okay, Louisville, I bet under 6.5. This has all the symptoms of a team on the verge of collapse. Satterfield's out there interviewing for other jobs in the offseason. Cunningham's a dynamic quarterback, no doubt about it, but he lost his 2 best wide receivers to the NFL, running back to the NFL. Skill position players are kind of depleted, very low depth on this team. Any injury could be kind of catastrophic for them. And the defense was one of the worst in the entire nation last year. I don't see how they turn it around on defense. I don't know if they have that kind of playing style either, where they can turn into a defensive team suddenly. Wasn't a big fan of that team whatsoever. Let's see. Washington State, another team that I'm not really high on. I bet under 6. Pac-12 is stacked this year. I mean, I can't really believe how good the Pac-12 is. All the other major conferences lost a lot of players to the NFL. The Pac-12 didn't. So they're going to be knocking each other off left and right. The one team that I really found a hard time getting a lot of wins is Washington State. And not only that, they brought in some weird transfers. Guarantano from Tennessee possibly might start as their quarterback. And he's awful. He's a head case. If he throws one interception, he throws 3. Don't trust that coach when it comes to defense whatsoever. And he's going to run an offense that was really, really effective at Hawaii. And against, you know, in a normal Pac-12 year, it might be really good. But there's defense this year in the Pac-12. And, I mean, we're talking just a horrible, horrible slate of games. He plays, starts Pac-12 against USC at home. Then he goes to Utah. Then he goes to Cal. Then he goes to then Oregon State comes in. That's probably a winnable game for them. Probably the only. Then BYU comes in, and then Arizona State they play on the road. Oregon they play on the road. They beat Arizona. You're still only talking 4 wins tops. I can't see him. And then they play at Washington at the end of the year. I couldn't find 6 to save my life. So they'll be favored in four. They're going to have to win two to beat me. It's a push. They're going to have to win three to beat me. So that felt good.
It sounds like you've got that sweet spot of like 6-7, and then you sort of go off that. You know, I didn't notice any, or I haven't seen any, rather. You don't really look at the 9.5-10 range or on the low end, the 1.5-2 range, huh?
I mean, I do some, and I mean, it just depends. I think there's one that I haven't bet yet that I'm really confused by the number, which is Iowa State over 9.5 being juiced to the under. I don't understand why the juice is to the under. And they're going to be favored in at least 10 games. I don't know. I think that they're probably the best team in the country. Nobody's talking about. They have 6 All-Americans at Iowa State. They have a tremendous coach. They can pass on you. They can run on you. And we already know about the defense. So I'm probably going to take plus money there. I did bet Houston over 8. You know, I got it before the juice went up. Maybe I was the juice. I don't know. But, yeah, I think Houston, they're going to be favored in 10 games, and their regular season win total is 8. They were regressing terribly last year, so maybe that's why they put the number bound, but I have no idea. They play the easiest schedule, I think, in the nation. It's really, really easy peasy, and they've been building something for, I don't know, since Holgorsen got there. You call it year zero, and then last year they had dealt with COVID worse than anybody, so that also factors into why people are probably down on them. Their stats look horrible from last year, but they were missing everybody for 3 of their games. You know, they got blown out by BYU as well. I don't know. I can't understand why this total is so low. So, yeah, I bet over 8 there.
The mental side to me, you know, this racket is so tough. The stick-to-itiveness, the capacities you have to just not go off the rails. I mean, discipline's the hardest part about this racket, easily.
Yeah, no, for sure. I recently just started reading and listening to this artist who was a gambler before he was an artist, and he made this really, really valid point in one of his interviews. He made $1 million by going to the casino and just hitting and running every single day. And he said something that was really, really telling, and I think that all sports bettors could probably relate to this, is that all it takes is discipline, but nobody has it. And it's totally true. You know, he just said that, you know, if you were to go to the casino with a goal of making $100 every single day, everybody could do it. But the problem is, once you get up 100, you want to get up 200, and you want to get up 300. And it's the same thing with these regular season win totals. You can bet them all day long, every day. But you got to face discipline with everything you do in this racket.
Oh, it's like your buddy that goes to the roulette table. He walks up there with $200. He's up $3,300. And you're like, what's the goal here? you turned 2 into 33, and now you're pushing more to the table. You have no idea how many times I've had to physically grab people and remove them from the table. Like, what is your goal?
No, on the other hand, what about the guy that's like stuck $3,300 and he's betting $100, you know, per hand now because he's running low on money? What's the goal there, you know? I mean, it's both ways. It's tough, man. I mean, yeah, the discipline is absolutely everything. It sounds like you've got a great hold out of them.
Well, I don't play tables. I haven't played a table since, let's see, 2012. So it's been, I quit cold turkey 9 years ago, buddy.
That's great. Yeah, no, I've never played tables. I'm not really into gambling at all. Like, I remember when I was like 25, we went to Vegas for my birthday, and a friend of mine said, we're going to play craps and they'll give us free drinks. And I was like, oh, awesome. Like free drinks cost $300 in 5 minutes. And I was like, this is the worst free drink I've ever had in my life. And that was it for me. I was just like blown away by how stupid that was. I was a poker player at the time, and I didn't really understand, you know, table games or anything. That was my first experience and last experience. I just couldn't believe how stupid that was.
Free drinks cost $300. That's an incredible line.
Yeah, our free drinks were $310 or something. It was crazy.
Oh man, that's good stuff. I want to lead you out with week one. Again, I don't want to ask you for your Rolodex of plays, but just your general strategy for when you see these lines and you know that a lot of these lines are going to be off because a book will take the results from last year. That'll weigh a lot into the equation, and in all reality, some of these teams aren't what they were last year. And then you've got, you know, their power ratings, which could very easily be off. I guess there's a lot of unknowns coming into week one, and the books will catch up, they will adjust, and they will have this shit figured out by weeks 3 or 4. But when it comes to week one, how aggressive do you get? How many plays will you make? How do you handle it all?
Well, week one is typically my worst week of the year, honestly. I think there's a combination of things. We were just talking about discipline, but you're looking at these numbers for 2 months. And, you know, a lot can change in those 2 months. Injuries, you know, on a week-to-week basis, you have an injury report. With fall camp, you get an injury, you know, every single day, it feels like, and you may have a bad bet that you made that, you know, felt good at the time. But I've gotten better over the years, actually. The last couple of years, I've won in week one, which is surprising. But normally, I would probably say that I don't have nearly the card that I do throughout weeks two, you know, weeks four through 12. First of all, I do better in conference because I'm a coaching handicapper. Everything that I do devolves from coaches for the most part. So I need in-conference play to start taking place where most of my matchups really come in hand. But I probably would say that I still have 15 to 20 bets in week one. It's not an alarming amount or anything like that, but it definitely makes me feel good. And I love the challenge of week one. Week one through four, I think you just learn so much if you're paying attention that you can use it for the entire year. Your priors in college football probably aren't going to work like they have in past years because everybody has so much returning production coming back. So you don't have the team that's on. You have like three teams this year that only have 8 returning starters, when in a normal year, you probably have 50 or 60. So it's a different handicap, but I like it. I like this handicap probably more so than wondering whether or not a freshman on USF is a good quarterback to back or not, you know?
I hear you, man. I know that week one, you know, the books back there, they're guessing as much as the players are, but the books don't have to lay the juice.
Right. Yeah, no, for sure. I think that every bookmaker's dream in the world is to have week ones in NFL and college football because, you know, everybody's super smart until they aren't, you know, and week ones is a total guessing game for a lot of people. I do 300 hours of preseason research, and I can tell you that I never get more giddy than week one when lines come out, and I never get more scared than the day before week one, kicks off. Because, you know, you never know what's going to happen in a season, but week one, it can really make you feel great. But at the same time, you're going to wake up, you know, Sunday morning and say, oh, my God, how did I not see that on so many games? There's just a lot of stuff that takes place in the early season that, you know, you can't project.
Eddie, I appreciate your time here. We could have gone a lot longer, but I have burned you out, I feel like. And I want to have you fresh and ready for college football and the NFL. Please follow @Walls_Edward. When you get to Boston next time, too, please look me up. We'll go to Fenway or we'll go to the Garden.
All right. Sounds good. I appreciate that.
That about does it for Chicken Dinner. Thanks to Eddie Walls for hopping on the show. Record check 158, 151, and 5. We are up 0.2 units. After preseason dubs on the Broncos and the Washington football team under, we have another one on Thursday night. We're going under 38.5, Patriots and the Eagles, and over the weekend, Vikings -2.5. Coming up on the show, we're going to drop the next one on Friday. Daniel Wallach, who is one of the best in the business when it comes to following sports betting and gaming law, he's going to break down the three hottest states right now: Florida, New York, California. Lots going on in those three states as the country continues to legalize sports wagering on a state-by-state basis. Cash some tickets, make some money. We'll talk to you Friday right here on Chicken Dinner.